Welcome into the Podium Gain Podcast. On today's edition, I am joined by Andrew Grumman from Fox Sports Wisconsin. Andrew, what's going on today?
Not too much. Thanks for having me on.
No, thank you for taking time out. Have you gotten over, now I know Andrew, we went to a school together actually at Arizona State. Have you gotten over the loss from this past weekend?
No, I don't think that one's going to sting at least until Oregon wins on Friday. So I know U of A doesn't end up winning the Pac-12 because ASU couldn't beat them.
And then what, but what happens if the other thing happens?
That's I don't even want to think about that right now because that wouldn't be good. And especially if they find a way to get into the playoff after that, I don't even want to think about that.
All right, I'll let you go on that. You always cared about ASU more than I did. I root for a team that just fired its football coach. That's not very good. So,
well, it's my hometown team that I support is in the Big Ten title game, so we can at least I have that.
Without a quarterback, somehow.
Without a passing game at all. So it's crazy.
It really is amazing. All right, so going on in that Milwaukee-Wisconsin area right now, you got the Badgers being good. The Packers look like they're the best team, at least in the NFC, maybe in the entire NFL. The Bucs are off to a 10-9 start. Are they generating any buzz locally?
Yeah, and that's what's surprising about the buzz they're generating is, like you said, the Packers and Badgers are playing well, and even if the Packers wouldn't be where they are in the standings, this is a Packers state, and they dominate talk radio. Just about everything this time of year is Packers. So anything the Bucks get this time of year means they're doing something right, and I can't even describe or put into words how different the vibe around the Bucks is now than it has been. Not even so much last year. We know what happened last year and how bad they were. But even in the years past, I mean, the buzz around the Bucks this year is night and day different than, you know, 5 years ago, last year, whenever. This team is genuinely has a lot of interest in this community, and I think that is a major, major step for this franchise and organization. Just in this 1 month, and in the summer too, when the new owners took over, and they did a lot of the right things and said a lot of the right things in the community, but this first month has been unbelievable. And you know, last year that you couldn't trust the attendance numbers or anything that they listed because you knew it was significantly lower, and they did finish last in the league in attendance last year. But you're looking at the arena this year on Saturday against Houston. I looked around and there were 17,000 people there legitimately, and I know for a lot of NBA cities that sounds like nothing, but here, that's a huge step. And in 1 month, this team has really, you know, got the city interested in the NBA and in the Bucks again, and that is just a huge step for the future of this franchise.
Now, that's interesting to me because I knew, like, nerdy NBA guys like me love the Bucks and right. They're fun to watch, but I wasn't sure if they were going to catch on with the casual fan, and that's good that it seems like they have.
Yeah, and it's slowly building, I think, with each game, too. I think that an important game, one that really, you know, I saw, you know, really pick up the interest in this team was that 3 overtime game in Brooklyn where the Bucks had, you know, numerous chances that they blew to win late, but and then they were down with their backs against the wall and they kept coming back. And I think what this community likes about this team that they're embracing about this team is how hard they play. And even on nights when they're not going to win, I think back to last night in Cleveland, no one probably expected them to win that game. But they played extremely hard, and they've been in almost every game. They're an exciting product to watch. You know, just there's so many storylines on a given night with this team. You know, with Jabari and with Giannis, and even with the head coach. You know, there's storylines every night with him, and it's just even as someone that's covering the team. Last year was so boring because there was just nothing. Nothing going on. Nothing of interest other than, you know, an 18-year-old Greek rookie that you're watching, but now they're just really fun to watch on a nightly basis.
All right, so on Tuesday they played a close game against the Cavaliers. That was on the road also. Now Larry Sanders made a move against Anderson Varejao that kind of made the rounds on the internet. That had to be his best off the dribble move, maybe his best offensive move ever.
Yeah, I think it definitely was because oftentimes you kind of cringe when Larry Sanders gets the ball because he tries to do stuff like that quite a bit, and he fails. He'll lose the ball, or you know, he just gets out of control. And Larry's offensive game is obviously way behind where he is defensively, and you know the glimmers like that leave a little bit of hope that he might maybe be able to develop some kind of offensive game. But yeah, that's the kind of athletic ability and those highlight plays that this team generates quite a bit on a nightly basis that I think the interest level is so high with this team.
It was funny that move, and then I don't know if you saw it. I forget who he did it against, but Alex Lynn had a coast to coast dunk where he was dribbling and he looked like he was a 5-year-old learning to dribble for the first time.
Running, I remember that one. Yeah, I saw that one.
Those are probably my two favorite plays of the season so far. They were both amazing. Watching big men do things that are awkward and they don't usually do is usually entertaining. It was interesting in that game. They were using the Greek Freak to guard Love, and they were putting Parker on LeBron a decent amount. Is that something Kidd does often? Does he usually use Giannis to guard the bigger guy and put Parker on the wing? I would have guessed opposite.
He's kind of been, he kind of hasn't had a consistent philosophy with that. Yeah, it's almost a nightly, things that change on a nightly basis of how he handles those kind of things. We were surprised Saturday night, last Saturday when they played Houston, that Giannis wasn't on James Harden more because James Harden was kind of torching O.J. Mayo, I think, had a first crack at him, and then Jared Bayless, they tried some quickness on him. And it wasn't until late in the fourth quarter where they put Giannis on him. The game was already decided, and then finally Harden seemed like he worked for the first time. Giannis is their best on-ball defender just because of his length, and you can't really shoot over him. That Brooklyn game, we keep going back to that. Joe Johnson had a couple game winners or game tying shots late that he missed because he just couldn't shoot over Giannis. And so we were surprised Saturday that when he didn't put Giannis on Harden, and then I was kind of surprised at least that we didn't see him more on LeBron yesterday. Jason Kidd hasn't really offered. We kind of asked about that at practice on Monday, and his explanation was we just want to throw multiple looks at these guys. My personal feeling might be maybe he didn't want Giannis in foul trouble because Giannis is he still can get in his own head a little bit if he picks up two early fouls. He might be taken away for the whole game, and they really do need him on the floor right now. And I was surprised to see Jabari on LeBron quite a bit last night because Jabari's quite frankly has not been all that good defensively. He's had his ups and downs, and I think he's got the ability to be a decent defender because of his athletic ability and size. I was kind of surprised. But Kidd has not been afraid to try things or change things or try different matchups or try different things. But Giannis is clearly this team's best on-ball defender just because he's unbelievable. You can't drive by him. And if he does, he can block your shot with his just long arms that are just not human, and you can't shoot over him. So, yeah, it was a little bit surprising last night that when Parker was on him, we definitely thought Giannis would be, but I think it just goes back to Jason Kidd is trying so many different things, he's not been unwilling to change throughout the first month of the season. He's done a lot of different things, and a lot of those moves that he's made have worked.
Where have you seen Giannis grow from year one to year two?
I think it's just confidence is the biggest thing because he's always been a confident kid, but just confidence in what he can do on the basketball court, I think, is the biggest area he's gotten better. I think back to those games in the fourth quarter earlier this year when he was playing power forward. There was a game against Memphis when he was matched up against Zach Randolph at power forward, and obviously Zach Randolph, much bigger, stronger, physically bigger, I should say, than Giannis, and it was a really fun back and forth to watch because when the Bucks had the ball, Giannis would just take it right by Zach Randolph, drive right by him to the hole and score. And on the defensive end, He was making Zach work. Zach scored his points in the fourth quarter, but he was making him physically work. And then the next night, or the next game, he does the same thing against Serge Ibaka in a similar matchup, fourth quarter type thing. Last year, he never would have had the confidence in just making... He would have turned the ball over, you know, against Zach. He would have hesitated taking the ball to the hole, maybe look to pass or be uncertain in his decisions instead of just going and attacking. And he's not making those silly turnovers because of, you know, indecisiveness that he did last year. He's just once he makes a decision to do something, he does it. It's amazing how much he's grown from year one to year two in that area, because now he can use that skill set so much. And sure, he's making mistakes. So he doesn't turn 20 until this coming Saturday, but he's just so he knows what he's doing on the court. I think that's probably the biggest improvement. But then off the court wise, just he continues to grow socially. I tell everyone who asks about this just how amazing it's been to watch this kid. From when he was first drafted and came over here, he was 18, you know, when he came over, but it really was like socially he was like 8 or 9 years old. First time in a foreign country, living by himself. This is the kid that lived with his parents and his family his entire life until he came over here. And he had so much to learn and so much, you know, just common sense, street smarts type stuff. And the fact that if you would have told me he is where he is now, in such a short time after observing him and watching him as a human being this time last year, I would have told you you're crazy. He's just a totally new person, and it's been extremely fun to watch his development.
Who were the players that kind of took him under his wing and helped him with stuff like that?
Yeah, last year, you know, the Bucks were known for. I mean, the locker room wasn't great last year, but some of the veterans did step up, and I think that was the biggest gain. You know, Caron Butler wasn't here a very long time, but I think he helped Giannis quite a bit. O.J. Mayo helped him quite a bit last year before O.J. kind of had his personal issues last year. Larry Sanders has been a guy that's kept Giannis under his wing. I think Saturday when Giannis and James Harden kind of got into it a little bit, Larry Sanders was right there with Giannis, you know, trying to come in and you know take care of him. You know, Larry looks at Giannis as his little brother, he calls him. They've had some good ones. That Zaza Pachulia is another one. And this year, the culture of the Bucks locker room is totally different than it was last year. They have some really good veterans this year that have bought into their roles, and I think that has helped the development of some of these younger players. You know, Jared Dudley's been very big. Zaza's still here and has been good, and Larry Sanders has been good in a leadership role, and so. Yeah, Giannis has been really helped by some of those veterans, both last year and this year, and just they've taught him how to live in America, I guess, for lack of a better way to put it. You know, Caron Butler last year said he got him hooked on hip hop music and just stuff like that you take for granted, that you think these 18-year-old kids, you know, most 19-year-olds in America know this stuff, but he didn't. He was such a sheltered life before he came over here. And so it's been a very unique experience, because it's so rare that an NBA player comes into the league like Giannis did last year.
The other young player on the team with extreme upside is Jabari Parker. One thing I've noticed with him, he seems to be hesitant to take outside shots. Right now, almost all of his shots are coming closer in the paint and right in the restricted area. Why do you think he's not pulling the trigger on his jumper right now?
Yeah, very much so. I think hesitant is the correct word just to describe him in general. He you can tell he's a very intelligent person when you talk to him, and you know this. But when you interview him or you ask him stuff, he's hesitant to give an answer or give what he really thinks or his true thoughts on the matter, because you can tell he's afraid to say something wrong. Like, he's a rookie and probably shouldn't be speaking to this, even though in the Bucks locker room, Jabari Parker is probably the face of this franchise right now with Giannis. He's still, it's just kind of, doesn't want to do the wrong thing. He's afraid of making mistakes, and I think that is kind of why he's been hesitant to shoot, you know, open shots or, you know, from the outside in games, because I think he's afraid to make mistakes, afraid to miss still. And there's going to be a time where he eventually gets over that, and you know, there's going to be a moment this year, I think, where he just realizes that that's what he has to do, and he can't be afraid to miss. And I think that is playing into it right now. I think the last two games, he's taken steps in his overall aggressiveness. Against Houston Saturday, finally got to the free throw line double-digit times. And Jabari Parker's game is he's a guy that should be averaging 6-7 free throw attempts a game. You know, probably when he comes into his own, that's when he'll be averaging. Finally got there. I think he got there 14 times on Saturday. And then yesterday he was aggressive. He didn't get to the foul line, but he was aggressive within the offense and was able to score. I think he hit 11 of his 15 shots. So I think he's starting to get it. And I think once he drops that, you know, maybe afraid to make mistakes, fear, that you're going to start to see his offensive game open up and pick up some more, because the flashes we've seen from Jabari have been incredible. This guy is going to be a really good player in this league. He can score, and he's an incredible athlete for his size. And I just think that right now he's still just kind of feeling his way in his first month in the league.
One thing when I was looking through the Bucks stats that kind of caught me off guard was Brandon Knight putting up really nice individual statistics, but when you look at his on-off court numbers, they've been about, I think it was about 15 points better when per 100 possessions when he's not playing. Is that a product of who he's playing with on the court, a little bit fluky? What's going on there that they're not playing as well when Knight's on the floor?
I think it's a little bit of both. I've had conversations with a couple people that, you know, that cover the Bucks too, and that when you look at old Brandon Knight's overall stats, if you just looked at his personal stats and had no uni and you didn't watch the team much, you'd say, oh, this guy's had a really good individual season, and he has. But I think the stats are a little bit misleading. I've watched games this year where I thought, oh, Brandon didn't have a very good game tonight, and then you look down at the final box and he had like 18 points, 6 rebounds, 7 assists, and that's a pretty good final line. And he still makes the silly turnovers that he probably shouldn't be making at this point in his career. Too many cross court passes that get picked off and stuff like that. So I think it is a little bit of his stats individually are a little bit misleading. I do think it is that he's played with a lot of different lineups. Jason Kidd has mixed and matched lineups throughout the year. Like that plays into it as well. And I think Brandon Knight, is kind of becoming a guy that his individual stats are going to look better than if you really break down, what he does on the court to help a team win. And too much, I think, this year at the end of games, he also has become a guy that wants to take over the game late or try to match shots with a superstar on the other team. And he gets burned that way as well. So, yeah, he's had a nice year, but I think the stats are really misleading for actually how he has played.
OJ Mayo, shooting percentage has dipped off, but he's still contributing in a positive fashion compared to last year, even with the shot not going as much.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, last year was no other way to put it but a disaster. For OJ Mayo, even when he signed with the team, you could tell he was overweight from what he had played previously in Dallas and other places. We don't know what happened, but everything points to that he had some serious issues going on in his personal life because things just spiraled out of control. He got sick, he continued to gain weight, and honestly, I didn't think he ever was going to be a productive player in the NBA again. That's how low he was at the end of last year. I mean, he didn't play for a 15-win team at the end of the year, and then he came to media day this year. He looked great. He's in great shape, and he's completely bought into Jason Kidd and what he's been preaching. He respects Kidd a ton, like a lot of these players do. And last year, OJ would not have been okay with a bench role. And he started this year and has spent most of this year on the bench. He's been in the starting lineup now. And early in the year, he was knocking down shots. He was shooting a really high percentage preseason and then early in the regular season. And he was a great player for them. Yeah, he's in a big shooting slump now, especially from three. But he's still been a really important part of the offense, even when he's not scoring, because he's really been a facilitator this year. He's looked to pass, and I think he's really contributed to a lot of the bench success when he was on the bench. He started the last few games because his willingness to pass. He's not just jacking up shots, and OJ has been a big part of the reason why this team has kind of surprised and won 10 games this far, because of his attitude, leadership, and the fact that he's been a real facilitator, especially when he was on that second unit, moving the ball and getting other guys good looks.
All right, one guy that's been mentioned throughout this podcast has been Jason Kidd. Now, Was he got to Milwaukee in a very weird way. Was he accepted with open arms right from the beginning, or was there a little bit of hesitancy with him as the head coach?
I think there was a little bit of hesitancy at the beginning, but once you know, that kind of died down, even going into training camp, I think that it was a welcome thing from most Bucks fans and people here in the area. I think that they understood that the way that they maybe went about it to get him wasn't right. Or it was a little bit off, but once basketball started and I think especially after this first month and how they've played, I think he's been really embraced here as the coach of this team, just because the way this team has played, I can't even put into words how different this team is from last year, and they have a lot of the same pieces, at least a lot of the same pieces playing. This team plays really hard for Jason Kidd. They all respect him, and when you talk to players about Jason as a coach, they'll all go back to his playing career and how much they listen to him and see how his words carry weight with them because of what he did as a player. I found that interesting that they kind of look back at that and they say this guy must know what he's doing because it worked for him as a player. And one thing OJ Mayo has said to a few of us is that Jason has an unbelievable ability to see things that are going to happen 4 or 5 plays down the road and help his players prepare for that. So I think that the way he got here has almost been forgotten because of how well that they've started and exceeded kind of the time frame for this rebuilding project. So I think everything with Jason Kidd has been a success in Milwaukee because I just think a lot of the things that he's done is just night and day from last year where we saw this team is actually running an offense and they're playing well defensively, and we didn't see that so much with Larry Drew last year. You can tell that they've certainly upgraded in the coaching department.
You had a story over at Fox Sports Wisconsin about this pretty recently. Or yesterday or today, I'm not sure which day it came out, but how do you think Milwaukee's going to handle this rougher schedule they have coming up this month?
Yeah, December's tough. They 12 of 15 games are against teams 500 or better. It's only 500 or better because one of those games is against the Kings, who are 500 right now. And then the three games they play against teams that are not 500 or better, one of them's against Oklahoma City, who Westbrook and Durant are back now, so they're a different team than they were earlier in the season, obviously. And two of those games are against Charlotte. They're 4-14, but Charlotte was a playoff team last year, and so they're capable of getting better, I guess, is my point there. So the schedule's tough. They only play 5 home games, and 2 of them are this week against Dallas and Miami. They go out west. They have a west swing, Phoenix, Portland, L.A. for the Clippers. So it's really tough. I think December is going to be a true test to whether the Bucks are a playoff contender in the East or they're just vastly improved from last year. They're going to compete in a lot of games, and they're going to miss out on the playoffs. And I think people in Milwaukee are kind of torn between what do we root for? Because so many years this franchise was fighting for that 8-7 spot with veterans, and that gets you no better as a franchise. And last year finally was the first year they knocked it down and got the number 2 overall pick. And but then this is a different team. This is a team led by 2 19-year-olds. And eventually, when does rebuilding, when do you need to start winning to give these guys experience? So I think they're kind of torn in what do they want from this Bucks team this year. This year it would probably be beneficial if they still got into the lottery and got another lottery pick. But December is going to tell us a lot. And, you know, I was kind of looking at the Eastern Conference standings and seeing, well, right now the Bucks would be in the 7th spot. Who's going to move up from who's the current not 8 to pass them? And there's, you know, there's not a lot of playoff contenders, in the bottom part of the Eastern Conference. So we'll see. But I think December is going to tell us a lot about that. I think personally the Bucks are not going to make the playoffs. I think that we're going to see a lot of games like Tuesday in Cleveland. They're going to compete. They're going to be close with good teams. But they're just going to, you know, not be able to pull out wins on the road at Cleveland or on the road against the Clippers, on the road against Dallas like they have in this stretch. They're going to play all these teams hard. They're not going to get blown out a lot. They've only been blown out really once, and that was when Toronto played unbelievably against them. Personally, I think December is going to bring them back down to earth. They're going to continue to be a fun team to watch, and maybe next year, once they add another piece in the lottery this year, is when you start to see the rebuild go back up toward, you know, okay, we want to make the playoffs now and get these young players playoff experience.
Well, the good thing about being in the East is even if they bomb the month of December, they could be okay and still make the playoffs. With them, you know what? I think it'd be good for them to make the playoffs rather than get another lottery pick. You could still get say if they're like the 7th or 8th seed in the East, you still get that late teen pick. Plus, you get these kids the experience of going to the playoffs. I would be rooting for them to win if I was a Bucks fan.
And there's definitely merit to that. I think that would be good. And, you know, Jabari and Giannis eventually are going to have to play in the playoffs. If you look at their current roster of pieces going forward, Larry Sanders is probably the only one that's played in the playoffs, and that was that 4-game sweep to Miami a couple of years ago that really wasn't much experience. And Jason Kidd's only coached in two playoff series last year with Brooklyn, so he's an inexperienced coach that could benefit from it. And even that mid-teens pick, John Hammond, as a general manager, you can question some of the moves he's made, trades and free agent signings when he was, you know, kind of under Herb Cole's command. But he's always drafted really well for the slot he's been in, you know, 15. 16, he's pulled Larry Sanders out of that slot. Brandon Jennings, was 10 or 11. John Henson, he picked, you know, I believe 14. Giannis was in that slot. So he's always drafted well. So you could probably count on Hammond to find a contributor at least in that spot. So, yeah, I do think there's definite benefit. And in Milwaukee, there's this other underlying issue that they need to continue to have this fan support. Interest in this town if the franchise is going to be here. They need to get a new arena built. They need to have plans in place by 2017 to get that done, and there's some serious positive momentum going toward that with these new owners and the private money they put down. But they need to eventually win, I think, to get the city to maybe put public to taxpayer money into it. So that's another underlying issue with this team that maybe a different franchise wouldn't have, is they need to keep this interest level up to get a new arena built.
And plus, when you have the team's built around 2 19-year-olds, you have room for internal improvement, and you don't necessarily, like, obviously you're going to need to add to the core and get pieces around them, but those guys have such high upside that you can pass on getting another lottery pick to have some success this season. Andrew, thank you very much. Appreciate your time. You got anything else you want to add or plug or anything like that before heading out?
No, I mean, thanks for having me on. All my work on the Bucks all year, FoxSportsWisconsin.com.
All right, that wraps up this edition of the Podium Gate Podcast.